Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you have done.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining tonight's show with NASCA. And we have a very special guest tonight, and Linda Lee Blakemore. She's from Pittsburgh area. And before we actually get to our story, I definitely want to let you know who my co-host is, and this is Kim Lakin tonight. How you doing, Kim?
Oh, sorry about that. I was muted, John. I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
That's okay. Yes, we got a very special guest tonight, and Linda Lee Blakemore. And like I said, before we get to her story, I want to tell you a little bit about our mission statement here at NASCA. And NASCA is the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And basically we, you know, work off of three areas. It's child abuse, trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. And we have a single purpose at NASCA, and that's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. Our first goal is educating the public. That's what basically NASCA does with every single show that I know we do and have been a part of here. That's our level. That NASCA provides so many platforms of, and that's educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sex abuse. Years ago, listen, you know, you didn't talk about this around the table at home. You know, nowadays it has to be because it's a pandemic. It's a worldwide pandemic, you know, so basically presenting facts, you know, showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem, and that affects every one of us, every single one of us. And the second way is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So NASCA has a lot of platforms. If you go onto our site, and you can reach us at www.nasca.org. And if you open the page up, it'll show you we have contact lists. Primary volunteers are there. Ambassadors, we are worldwide. Every single state, I know we go all the way to the Philippines and as far as I know, all over Mexico, Australia, New Zealand, and I'm so proud to be a part of this organization. So, you know, furthermore, we also have many programs, and there's news, articles, stats, all kind of things there. And I do want to let you know that we do have a call-in number, okay? So if you would like to call in or listen to the show and maybe have a question for Linda or a comment later on, the guest call-in number is area code 646-595-2118. So once again, I'm your host, John Anderson, and my co-host is Kim Lakin, and our very special guest tonight is Linda Lee Blakemore. Linda is from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and she is a child abuse survivor, an author, a speaker, and an advocate. And she has a first book called, Kids Helping Kids and Breaking the Silence of Sexual Abuse, and tells the true stories of 15 child survivors. Wow. That's pretty intense right there on its own. I can't wait to listen to this part, because I'm very interested in actually every single one of those situations is ideal for what NASCA provides. So without any further ado, I'm going to bring Linda in. Hi, Linda. How are you?
I'm fine, John. How are you? Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great. Thank you so much for being here tonight. I really do. We really appreciate everything that you're doing. Especially with your first book is what it says here. So you have more books, huh?
I do. So the first book was a book that I wrote when I wasn't quite ready to confront my own issues of abuse on a level that would allow me to write, you know, as an evolved narrator. For goodness sakes, my
right.
mom didn't even know at the time what had happened to me. So that book was, it was really an interesting, it came about in an interesting way. So I had gone through a lot of the healing and a lot of the therapy with the Pittsburgh Action Against Rape, and I can't speak highly enough about them. They were just absolutely fabulous. One of the things that the therapist there did, she gave me or told me to purchase a book called The Courage to Heal by Ellen Bass and Laura Davis. And it is a fabulous book for adult survivors. And at the end of each chapter, there's a writing exercise. And I had always loved to write. Even as a child, you would find me in my stretched across the bed with a tablet, you know. But as we get older and get busy, life took me away from the craft. With the return of those memories and the presentation of that book, at the end of each chapter was a writing exercise. That healing took me back to the writing that I so needed to heal but so loved to do.
Right.
I made my way through that book, and as I'm sure other survivors will feel, that it takes so many people to get you through the experience and to get you to a place of feeling somewhat whole and on the path to healing. I wanted to give back.
Absolutely.
And I thought my way to do that was going to be to write. So I decided I was going to write a novel about, you know, a little girl. And, of course, it would be based on my life, but very loosely based. And Ernest Hemingway once said that the writing is easy. All you have to do is cut yourself on the and bleed on the page. Well, I wasn't able or ready to bleed on the page. I was holding back. And you could really see it in the writing. I had been lucky enough to find a literary agent in California that would work with me. And every month I would send her a chapter, and every month she would send me back the written pages, you know, with her little notes all over them. And it was really bad. I pulled it out recently, and I have to tell you, I kind of chuckled at how bad it was. But, you know, she kept saying that she wanted me to tell my true story. And, you know, as I said, I just wasn't healed enough or evolved enough. And my mom really didn't know, and I wasn't ready to go there. So I didn't know what else to do, and the literary agent said to me, I want you to go volunteer. So I wasn't sure why I should do that, but I'm a firm believer that you follow these leads. They're there for a reason, and I knew it was taking me
Absolutely,
in a direction
yes.
I needed to go in. So I did. I picked up the phone, and I called Pittsburgh Child Advocacy, and I met a woman by the name of Erica Harkema. And if you're not familiar with what they do, Pittsburgh Child Advocacy is the group that does the forensic interviews for children in their child abuse situation. So these are really some pretty heroic people at the front lines.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, one day I think you're absolutely right, because they are right there dealing with it and protecting children as best they can. So,
well, you know, that
one
was
another
case, though, Linda. You know, that was the biggest thing about that, was that nowadays things have changed because of you. You know, years ago, it took everything that we had in us to try to get them to recognize the things that they are now, you know. So I just want to make
True.
That aware, because I've been going through this a long time as you, and we know what it's taken to get there. And it's still not there, but thanks to you that you know, that this is why it's finally happening. Yes. So go ahead. Thank you.
Well, I really appreciated the opportunity to be able not only to be here, but back then to, you know, to do the volunteer work. And anyway, one day I was, you know, I was not exposed to any of the children. I wasn't on that level at all, of course. I was doing some paper filing or whatever it was they gave me to do. And a little boy came in for his forensic interview, and this chokes me up even just to talk about it. I never met him, but his story was on the lips of everyone who passed the halls. And as it turned out, having been sexually abused for years, this 10-year-old lashed out, and he raped his 5-year-old sister. And I will add to that the story goes on that while these kiddos were enduring their forensic interviews, as I understood it, and I can't say this is true or not, but this is what I heard, the perpetrator was at home burning the house to destroy the evidence. Just sad stuff. So
yeah.
It was really a horrific day for me. I'm a mom with 4 children, and I just could not get that little boy or his sister out of my head.
Mm-hmm.
So quite honestly, I spent that whole night unable to sleep. I just walked around, and all I could think was prevention and intervention needed to do more to destroy the walls of silence that locked its victims in continued abuse. But I had no idea what I could do or how to do it. And then it came to me as a mom, right? Children are more likely to listen to their friends than ever listen to a grown-up. My kids were no exception. And that's when it hit me. I would write a book where children would tell their true stories to help other children.
Mm-hmm.
And Kids Helping Kids Break the Silence of Sexual Abuse was written to be a book of education. Along with each story was a chapter, an educational chapter, teaching, you know, how to stay safe, what is sexual abuse, how to stay safe. The book was also designed as a tool for intervention to help when a child is trapped in silence. And, of course, a book of hope and healing, because each of these children had managed to get through it and could tell their story of hope and healing.
I tell you what, that is
research.
Absolutely ingenious. That is ingenious. It really is. That's one of the smartest things I've ever heard, because I have also wondered what it would be like if I would have known about different things, you know, that happened to me by way of other kids, you know. And you know, just to let you know what happened to me real quick is that, yes, I had to go to my friends in order for them to tell my mom that I was being abused, you see?
Oh,
you see, there
my,
goes.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm so sorry.
My friends told
yes.
my mom, see? So there you go. You hit that right on the head, right on the head. I love that. Absolutely love it.
Well, there wasn't another book out there like it. And the interesting thing is, in 6 months, through the power of God, the book was written. The book, I had all of the stories, I had the chapters, I had endorsements coming in like crazy, endorsements from all over the country, Pittsburgh Action Against Rape, Centers for Victims of Violent Crime, Dr. Robert Brooks, who out of Harvard, who wrote Raising Resilient Children, and just anybody that I asked, even Chicken Soup for the Soul gave me an endorsement just straight out. I mean, I know today if you try to get an endorsement, you may have to pay for it. But back then they were just Jack Canfield and his team. Actually, it was his personal assistant who called me to say, where do we send this endorsement? So it was very, I was the instrument through which it was written, and it was just meant to be. It was something that needed to be done, and it happened very quickly. I also booked speaking engagements. I traveled the country. I packed boxes of books in my car, and I stood up in front of child abuse professionals, people that are in the trenches every day, and, you know, told them about the children in the book and sold the book. And we got some corporations to donate some of the books to some of the child abuse agencies that couldn't afford to buy them. It happened fast. I, the publisher was quick. Everything was just fast.
Wow.
And before I knew it, it was a little bit of a whirlwind. Of course, you know, I wrote
just
a
listening
second book.
To this has me so pumped up right now. I'm like, wow, yes, keep going, girl. You know, because this is me. I love this. I mean, this is one of the best stories I think I've ever heard. I have to say, just because of your approach to everything. And I know Kim probably wants to come on and maybe ask a question or a comment to you, but I do have one thing I wanted to ask you before we move on from here, if I can ask you, is that, you know, you said you had a transition between, you know, your books, right, where you basically weren't ready. You know, what kind of changed for you, and how did you know you were ready, so to speak, to, you know, move on from what you were leaving in the trenches back then? You
well,
know, what changed
you know, I will
for you?
Tell you, I will tell you that a lot of therapy, of course, and a lot of writing, because my process of healing and growing is through writing. I think that way, I learn that way, and apparently I heal that way. I had been married to a very kind and loving and good provider, and I really was unsettled. There was something inside me that was brewing. There was a demon in me. And I left my husband, and I sought out an older man. I had no idea at the time why, but I sought out an older man who was abusive. And that relationship, it turned out that he was married and lying, and I was a single mother with four kids and in a really bad situation, and it ended with intimate sexual assault. And then my husband, my estranged husband, took me back, I think as much for our children as for me, but I was falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
He was right there to catch. And I picked myself up, and I thought I put myself back together, but there's no way to do that in the condition I was in. And I found myself again attracted to another older man. And as I was moving forward in that relationship, getting engaged to this gentleman, is when all of my memories of abuse came back. And I had to go through all of the therapy at that time with the Pittsburgh Action Against Rape. I thought that because I had done that therapy, John, I thought, look, I've done it. I've written the book. I've gone to therapy. I've traveled the country. I'm healed. I really thought I was healed. And I was so buffaloed. I had myself buffaloed. And as this very unhealthy relationship with what became my second husband continued, every 2 years he would leave, and I would always take him back. I was devastated. I can't live without him. The trauma bonding that I had was, I'm sure, apparent to every therapist I spoke to, but none of the therapists put it to me in those terms, and I'm sure if they tried, I would not have been able to understand. But, you know, basically our past, when the past is filled with trauma, the trauma will lure us toward unhealthy partners as a way to remember, confront, overcome, maybe get control over something we could not control as a child, and in my case, to get the outcome I didn't get as a child.
I'll agree with that 100%. I can, you know, because I can relate to that. I'm the same way. And there's no question that the reasons that I look back at it, you know, were due to the fact that, you know, the trauma imposes basically brain damage, you know. So it does control a lot of things that you're unaware of, what you're doing, the way you're thinking, you know, and basically you're out of control and you don't realize it, you know. And so it can affect, you know, big-time relationships. I know all of us, you know, can relate to that. You know, there's no question about it.
Yes, and my second husband certainly had some, you know, we had some good times, but the bad times were really bad times. And he had left me for the fourth time, and this time he left because his best friend had been charged with possession of child pornography, and he felt some need to rescue his friend. I don't know why. I'll never know why, but he moved out of our home and moved in with his best friend, and I started writing to understand the demons that possessed my second husband. I started journaling in a way I'd never journaled before. I was really vulnerable and honest and open with myself. I had shoeboxes full of things I would never mail, right?
Mm-hmm.
And interesting, John, what I found were the demons inside me. The more I wrote and the more I healed and the more I learned about myself, the person who had abused me as a child was exactly the same number of years older than me as my second husband. And
wow.
As also, you know, the other gentleman that, you know, was abusive to me. And and so, you know, every couple of years, the book was beginning to take shape in the form of essays or scenes, as you will, as I remembered them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was growing and I was healing and I was grieving. And then one day I had sort of an epiphany moment, and I don't want to, give a spoiler. So, but I was sitting and by myself, and all of the words that the therapist had said to me over the years, all of their advice, everything started to fall into place in my head and everything began to make sense. And I realized why I had chosen this second husband. I realized why I held on to him so tightly and why I always took him back. And I also realized that staying with him was going to keep me entrenched in the very thing I needed to move beyond. And so the book that I've written, I do take the reader through all of that, and I'm not graphic in any way, but I do show myself very vulnerable and making unhealthy choices. And when I finished writing the book, the interesting thing is it's very personal. You know, and the people, everyone here who is listening understands this is personal stuff. And so I said to the girls in my writing group, you know, I share this with you, but I'm not sure I want to share it with the world. And they all kept saying, you know, other people need to read this. They can benefit from this. Other women, you know, will relate to you and the choices you've made and, you know, all that kind of thing. And I just wasn't sure. So interestingly enough, another intervention. So somebody said to me, would you mind having lunch with Susie because she's really making a lot of bad decisions in her relationships and in her life, and they're affecting her children, and maybe you can talk to her. So she and I went to lunch, and just like with the first book, I could have just given her sage motherly advice. But I knew that if I told her my story, she would learn so much more and relate to me so much more. So that's what I did. I just sat across the table from her, and I told her my story.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finished, she got up and she walked around and she gave me a big hug and she said, you have helped me more than you will ever know. At that moment, John, I went back to my writing group friends and my second husband at the time, and I said, I have to publish this. It's personal, mm-hmm. and it could, you know, it could ruffle some feathers. I mean, we all have friends who are writers that have, you know, endured some difficulties, but I said, I think I need to put it out there. So that's what I did. So I found a publisher.
You know, earlier you had mentioned somebody's name. Was it Erica, like a Hawkmore or something like
yes.
that?
Erica Harkema. Unfortunately, she's I'm sorry.
Well, go ahead. I wanted to find out some more information on her because you had mentioned her, and I was like, how did she have an impact on the way that you did things? Was she a positive influence for you?
She was amazing. She is no longer with us, unfortunately. She did pass at a very early age. We became very good friends. She became a mentor for me, helping me to understand everything really that I needed to know to have faith in myself, to not blame myself, to accept myself as, you know, someone who had come through this as a survivor. If I survived mm-hmm. that, I can survive anything. And I really did have a strong sense because of her. She was
yeah.
an amazing woman. Who did amazing things.
Well, you
things.
Answered my question because that's exactly, I wanted to find out, you know, because you did mention her name and I could tell there was something about her, you know, and I'm like, well,
mm-hmm.
you know, there has to be something there. And then the more you talked about her, it's like, wow, this is a lot more in detail than I even imagined it would be. I mean, this is like the basis of where your work kind of took off from, huh?
I think that's true. And when she passed away, something that stuck with me and will stay with me forever, there was a card laying on her chest just underneath one of her hands, and it was written in a child's writing, and it said, thank you for saving my life. She did incredible work. She made a contribution to the world that I don't know how many people could possibly make. She went on to write the introduction to children for my first book, Kids Helping Kids, Break the Silence of Sexual mm-hmm. Abuse. And Dr. Walter Smith out of Pittsburgh Family Resources wrote the introduction to parents for that book also.
Okay.
So there were a lot of people. It took a lot of people. And the publisher that I had at the time for that book, Lighthouse Point Press, Ralph Yerrick, who I'm still very good friends with today, he told me that he wanted me to send the book to 6 professionals across the country and have them all evaluate it just to make sure that it was everything that it needed to be. So it went through a very rigorous...
So what kind of professionals are you referring to, like psychologists, things of that
yes.
nature, doctors, trauma specialists, just a variety, you know?
They were a variety.
One
of them was a trainer. So what he did was he was a PhD in child psychology, and he went in and trained all of the professionals who dealt in the world of child victimization. And I don't know if he had any limits or any vertical specifications, but he reviewed the book in depth. They all reviewed it in depth to make sure that it had the credibility that it needed to have
right.
to have the impact. And the book sold really well, and it still sells today. Believe it or not, it's been
mm-hmm.
maybe 10 years, and it still sells today.
And two, I know Kim's been waiting so patiently on the other side. I wanted to bring her in just a second, but I did, you know, want to say that you know, the authenticity, you know, and the fact that there's nothing but true, you know, empathy in that book is what makes the difference in it. You know, it's there. So there's no way
yeah.
to, you know, cover things up of that nature. Not when you know the true, you know, authenticity is right there. I mean, it's the perfect thing you ever could have thought of. I have to commend you for that, really. I mean,
well,
it's absolutely
thank you very
wonderful.
Much.
So, Kim, how are you?
Hey, everyone. Good. I'm just listening, so I didn't want to interrupt, but yeah. Well, thank you, Linda, so much for writing that book and coming on and telling your story today. And
well, thank you for having me. Yes.
Yeah, I'm just sorry, and because it breaks my heart every time I hear, you know, the story of another child that had been abused, and I know that's what we do here, but I just wanted to let you know that I'm sorry. I'm sorry that happened to you, and it shouldn't have happened to you. So,
well, thank you very much, but I have to say that I can't imagine myself any other way, and I can only believe that something good is coming out of it, and I'm good with that. It was a long journey, but I made it. I did some interesting research.
Right?
There you go. I'm still on it, and I'm really hoping that this next book will have the same kind of impact to help people understand you're not alone. And, you know, you have to be kind to yourself. You're making the choices that you're making because of the things that you've been through. And those choices, even when people don't understand them, are there for a reason. They're helping you to heal and to get where you need to be in your life. And that's okay. It's okay if sometimes the steps that we take aren't really, you know, straight. Sometimes they're a little sideways, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I found some interesting statistics when I was doing some of my research. And, of course, as we know, you know, one in four little girls, and I know there's statistics for boys as well, but one in four little girls is a victim of child sexual abuse. What I learned that I did not know is that a child victim is 6 times more likely to be sexually assaulted as a teen or an adult. That's a huge statistic to me. Each year in the U.S. alone, there are over 463,000 female victims 12 years or older of rape and
That's
sexual assault.
That's absolutely correct.
Every single year.
I just looked that up. That's amazing you brought that up. In fact, earlier today I was looking at some of those same stats that you're just talking about, and actually it turns out to be 1 in 6 is the boys, you know. And another stat, too, is that under the age of 10, when girls, more than likely it's through somebody within the household or a relative, you know.
Of course.
And that's
one
of the stats, you know, like 96%. I mean, way up there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's amazing you brought that up.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too, of when we talk about the 1 in 5 women who are sexually assaulted, half of those assaults, these are adults and teens, but half of those are perpetrated by an acquaintance also. And a third of those don't get reported because of the connection. Another thing that I found really interesting that kind of pertains to the, you know, the in and out of relationships, 1 in 3 women will experience physical and sometimes intimate physical violence by their partner or former partner. And more than 3 women are murdered by their partners in this country every single day. That's 4,000 women every year. And that leads me to something that sort of I didn't know till I started doing the deep dive. But despite the statistics, a woman will return to an unhealthy relationship 7 times before leaving for good. That's exactly what I did. That's exactly what so many of the women I know have done. It takes that much time sometimes to get out. And I know when you look on the news, you know, people will say, you know, if you've watched the program, let's say The Maid or something like that, you know, why do women go back? Why does she stay? And, of course, there's 2 reasons, as we talked about once before. You know, when our past is cloaked in trauma, it will lure us toward unhealthy partners as a way to go back and remember or work through our psychological issues. But there's also something called trauma bonding. And trauma bonding is a really interesting component because it feels like love at first sight. It's fast and furious. It's, you know, it's lightning bolts and fireworks and all those kinds of things. And sometimes, you know, it's easy to mistake it for this is the man I've been waiting for, the woman I've been waiting for. But it's not. It's actually the person that you need at that moment to
perhaps
take you to. Exactly. But, you know, with trauma bonding, you know, it's very fast and furious. You will find that the person in the trauma who has the trauma connection will make a lot of big life changes. You know, we've all heard of the person who leaves their spouse like I did, or even, you know, sacrifice. I've heard of, you know, one woman who left not only her spouse but all of her children for a man. But when you're in a trauma situation, you'll find yourself, he puts you on a pedestal. One minute you can't do anything wrong, and the next minute you can't do anything right. Not a healthy bond. You know, if you challenge him, it becomes almost the same dysfunctional pattern as domestic violence. You know, he makes it your fault, or as a narcissistic involvement. But the big thing for trauma bonding is she might really believe that he's the only one who can fulfill her needs. And if he doesn't love her, she won't be lovable. And so she'll start investing all of her time trying to fix him, as I did, in order to reignite his love bond. Or she may develop a fear of abandonment that she didn't even know she had because she doesn't think she can live without him. So even though she may want to end the relationship, you know, she fills with panic and fear anytime there is a breakup, and she, like me, goes running back. So the trauma bonding will keep a woman in an unhealthy relationship. Sometimes it can take those seven times just to get out. And that seven times includes even when it is unsafe. It's not just when it's unhealthy. It emotionally, it can be unsafe physically also.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing, too, is that anytime that I think you're holding on to things in a relationship where, in my situation, I can just be honest and say that there were many a times that I just did not say anything. It was like I was scared to, you know, it was embarrassing.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was young. And it definitely, you know, impacted a lot of my, all really, I'd say every single one of my relationships, no question about it, you know, one way or another. And, you know, now, you know, I have a beautiful wife. She's very supporting, thank God, you know. But, you know, previous relationships were that of me not opening up, I guess, and just being myself, you know. And I was too scared to, you know, what would they think of me? You know, is this going to affect our relationship now, you know? And it always, always haunted me for such a long time, you know, but I was glad to let that one go. Ooh, yeah.
I think for me, I always felt very damaged and less than, unworthy. I felt like the people that I dated were above me, because I was this damaged individual and I had this secret. And if they found out my secret, they wouldn't want me anymore. And that was quite the heavy burden to carry. Quite the heavy burden.
Well, that's exactly what happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Linda, I'll just be honest with you and tell you what happened to me was that I got shut out of my community when I was 10. Everybody. Lost all my friends. You know,
wow.
So I know what that's like. You know, that's the one thing in my life that really hurt me was the fact that I knew who were my friends and who weren't, you know, after when I say I had hundreds of witnesses, I had hundreds of witnesses, okay? And this guy wound up raping 26 kids after me. And I took him to court, and he got acquitted. Can you believe that? Yeah. I mean, I had kids that were 10 years old sitting in a courtroom testifying against this monster, and he still got acquitted. And 26 kids after me, you know, this just goes to show you, you know, that how long I've been involved with that. But I can understand being shut out, you know. And you know what I've learned from it, though? Nowadays, I can't wait to walk into a room. Because if somebody don't like me for who I am now, then they got a problem, you know. And listen, you know, you don't have to be a part of my life, but by God, when it comes down to child safety, yeah, guess who was, you know, up in Baton Rouge, you know, for 4 days and 16 hours a day fighting for that abolishment for statute of limitations? Me, you know. I didn't see anybody else there, you know, maybe a few other people, but no, So that's my thing, you know, is that I'm proud to say who I am now and hold my head up high. And it's taken a very long time for me to get there.
I agree, but congratulations, and the world is a better place because you are in it. That's a wonderful thing,
thank
John.
You.
It's a wonderful thing. You know, when you think about the number of children that you have saved and are saving exponentially forward, is amazing. It's just amazing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you do
so
great
people
work.
People know who I am now. You know, everywhere I go, people hug me now. They shake my hand. They come out their way. You know, I'm like, I'm impressed, but I'm not trying to do anything special. I'm just making sure that, number one, the kids are protected, and that I can keep up, you know, with continuing to do that. And the other thing is that I will continue to make sure that pedophiles are put away. And that's the two things. I do go after justice really hard.
I think that, unfortunately, that is a fight that we can never, ever slow down because it grows exponentially every year. And you know, you add in the Internet. And, you know, the child porn and all of the, thank goodness for all of the news and on sex trafficking and so forth. I mean, but there's so much more that's going on, and we're discovering more and more every day. It's not slowing down.
Mm-hmm. You know, that one stat of 460,000 plus. You know, that just blows my mind. In fact, you know what? We are doubled. You know who the next one is behind us? I think it's the UK. And they're at 200-something thousand a year. Yeah, you know. But, yeah, there's just some of these numbers are just it's mind-boggling. It really is.
And I think, too, COVID, as you and I both know, that, you know, child abuse statistics always increase over the holidays, over the summer when children are trapped at home. And COVID left a lot of children very vulnerable.
Yeah, Carol, our vice president, speaks about that all the time. Yeah, all the time. She said, you know, and it's true. I mean, and like the stat I was telling you about earlier, you know, the 96% of, you know, kids, both boys and girls, under the age of 10, happens at home, you know, whether it be an uncle or a dad or, you know, and it's 96% of those are men, okay? So they're, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an interesting study, you know, and some people are floored when they hear some of these statistics because they've not been around it. They've not been exposed. I did an interview for one woman, and she just kept coming back to it. She said, I've never heard of all of this. It was all new to her, and yet you and I know about it all day, every day, but so much more education needs to continue, right? We need to bring it to the Facebooks and the Instagrams and TikToks and all those places and get the words out, because it really is not – it's still not where it needs to be. We have to – there's still some silence we need to break.
Oh, absolutely. That's always more work to be done. There's no question about that. But yeah, I was looking at something in your bio I wanted to ask you about, because it really kind of like says everything that's happened with a lot of our lives here. And, you know, going into the, you know, the relationship and choosing that wrong partner in the first place, okay? It's like, did you live and learn, or did you just get that much more educated through the years where you changed, basically? Your thought process is different now than it was then, or is it both? You know, I mean, what do you think is the key, you know, of that in particular? Because it does affect a lot of us, you know.
I think that it for me, it was a learning curve. So I was naturally doing the healing because I was continuing in therapy. And I was also continuing to grow personally. I was becoming more independent. I was setting small goals for myself, but I was stepping away from that relationship a little bit at a time. I was grieving the relationship and growing stronger in myself at the same time, all while healing, continuing to heal, and all while also writing. And I don't know if writing benefits other people the way it benefited me, but I found it very important to take the thoughts and the feelings and the hurt and put it down on paper. I wrote a letter to everybody. I wrote a letter to the child within me. I wrote a letter to the parents who didn't protect me. And all of those letters went into a shoebox. They are never to be mailed. And in fact, could possibly even be a good idea just to burn them right then and there. But I wrote letters to all the people that I needed to say something to. And in fact, the person that was my abuser, I wrote him a letter, and I, in my little, you know, pink Minnie Mouse nightshirt, got up out of bed, and I was an adult, right? I was in my mid-30s, and I got up out of bed and slippers and all, and I drove to the mailbox. I was going to mail this letter to him. I was intent. Oh. He was going to hear what I had to say. And, of course, you know, reason came over me, and I didn't put the letter in the mailbox. I took it home and stashed it in the shoebox. So I was doing all of those things. I was trying to heal the child inside me. I was trying to heal the adult. I was trying to learn and understand the mistakes that I was making. I was growing stronger as a woman and a mother, and I was beginning slowly. It was very slow for me, but it took me 13 years to really, through that relationship and all the on and off of that relationship, to come to the understanding of who I was, to take responsibility for myself, to stop trying to fix him, to accept him for who he was, and to stand on my own two feet and to say, I'm good enough just the way I am, and you know what? I'm going to be okay. I was terrified, John. I was terrified. But when all the pieces of the puzzle came together for me, as a result of all those things I had done all those years, somehow the strength also came. And I just knew it was what I had to do, and I was finally ready to do it. I will tell you that I had, throughout my life, probably 3 or 4 guardian angels, and that also made the world of difference for me. You know, we can't live in a vacuum. We need people that are truly trusting and have our best interest at heart. And I was very, very blessed to have some tremendous friends. So it was all a process. I think that's a big part of it. I really do. They believed in me sometimes when I didn't. But eventually, slowly, painfully sometimes, lots of tears, lots of times, lots of insecurities, but, you know, I tested myself and I did okay. And then I tested a little bit more and, I did that too, you know. And of course, as you go through my book, that's one of the things that I tried to show And, of course, you know, in a good book, you don't tell, you show. But to really show other women the steps I was taking, and their steps might be different, but the underlying process would be the same. You know, just it's baby steps. And you give yourself permission when it doesn't quite go your way. And you have to be kind to yourself when, you know, I can remember my sister saying to me at one point, you know, you're going to do this when you're ready. You're going to leave him when you're ready. And she wanted me to leave. She didn't like the person that I was when I was with him. I was weak and needy and insecure and childlike. I was childlike. Because that was the whole purpose for the relationship, to go back and be that child and have a different outcome. And, of course, there's no way to get that outcome. It doesn't work that way, right, John. So,
yeah.
For
me, that was one of the biggest things was to let that boy go, you know, that 9-year-old boy go. And it took me a long time, you know, and still, you know, I don't think it'll ever totally be gone, but it's changed my life to look at it from a different perspective now and really educate myself on every extreme measure that I can think of to be, you know, attacking these individuals in a court of law, because this is what it comes down to now, is that, you know, in order for us to protect the children, the laws have to be passed, and we have to be educated ourselves. You know, I mean, we can't rely on attorneys to do everything, because half the time, you know, they need to be educated too. So this is what we do here. And this is what exactly I love about NASCA, is that I get the chance to meet you, Linda and Kim, and this platform that NASCA provides is such a beautiful place to be, you know, because I know we can always, you know, find you if we have to. And you know, we're going to get into some of that in a little bit, but I do want to give our call-in number out real quick, if I can, and maybe we'll bring Kim in for a minute or two. So that's area code 646-595-2118. If you want to call in to the show, you're more than welcome to. Now, our guest tonight is Linda Lee Blakemore from Pittsburgh, and she's an author, very interesting stories. What a beautiful person she really is. She's an entrepreneur in every aspect of what we need on this planet for what we do. And it's just been such a pleasure so far, Linda, to hear your story. It's been wonderful. So, Kim, you want to come in and talk to Linda a little bit?
Yeah, I was just thinking about all the statistics and stuff that you were talking about, and I was looking at some of the ones that I have as well. And one of my big things when I go out and speak to is I want people to understand that it's just as traumatic to be abused by another child as it is by an adult. And, you know, there's like one of the statistics is 1 in 7 children will be abused by another juvenile, and it'll happen, most likely it happens like after school, between 3 and 7 p.m. and on school days.
Wow.
And so in my situation, I went into my friend's house at 5 years old, and her cousins were there, and they had been being abused, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And so they acted out on me, like you had talked about. And I knew that I didn't want to be there, and so I ran out. But I saw my friend being sexually abused, and at 5 years old,
Aww.
All I thought was, she's more mature than I am, because she's sitting there and she's taking it, when in reality, you know, it was a part of her life, you know, the sexual abuse, unfortunately, in that family. And so, you know, people need to understand that we need to be talking to kids in a way to, like, you know, like you said, that that helps them understand that they can say something. You know, if I would have known, if I had been told, then I would have walked out of that house and gone and told somebody. But instead,
yes,
I didn't know. I didn't even know what was going on. And so in my mind, I just kept it to myself. And it bothered me for a long time because I had lost, you know, touch with my friend. She had moved to a different state. And we a few years ago we reconnected, and I told her, you know, what had happened, and she had some memories of things that I told her, but she didn't know if it was true or not. And so it was really healing for us to get together and talk about the incidents that happened. And so, yeah, absolutely. I love the fact that you're talking about kids helping kids. But we've also got to educate the parents, and that's one of the things that I do. I'm a facilitator and an instructor for Darkness to Light. I don't know if you're familiar with them at all.
No, it's called
Darkness to Light. So we believe, you know, initially we need to educate the parents. That's what's going to get ahead of the whole thing. You know, like you said, it's hard. I don't know that we ever can get ahead of it. But if we are going to, we need to educate the parents so that they know how to talk to kids, so that they know how to recognize if there is, you know, somebody coming into their family or their church or their school who possibly has bad intentions. And not be afraid, because they are educated enough in watching for these signs, not be afraid to speak up and say, I don't feel comfortable with this person. I don't feel comfortable with the way you're touching my child. I don't feel comfortable, you know, whatever, with the stranger that's, you know, touching his child inappropriately in a park. You know, we have a right to say something because, you know, we're the only ones that can, is people that know. So Darkness, like I said, we believe, first of all, that we need to educate the parents. And so I go out there and I do classes, 2-hour classes on child sexual abuse prevention. And, you know, we go through some of the statistics. We have videos that have survivors on them that talk about, you know, their journey to healing, and then also professionals that talk about it as well. So if you're, yeah, interested, go ahead and at some point go to, it's the letter D, the number 2, and the letter L.org.
Okay,
and,
yeah, I'll absolutely do that.
And the program that I facilitate is called Stewards of Children, and there's several different things on their website too, 7 different modulars that you can take, and you can take it online or you can take it in a group setting, you know, with me as a facilitator. So either one is just as good as the other, but we need to get ahead as much as we can and get people to understand how this happens, you know?
Well, and it can happen to you. It can happen to your child. People always have this feeling it won't happen to me, but that's not true.
I live in a good neighborhood. Right.
Right. Right. And I think parents also need to be educated on the warning signs. Children don't have words to describe this, and so they are going to show us in their behaviors. What are those behaviors?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, certain things like, not I'm wanting to go to a friend's house anymore. That's what I did. I just said, no, I'm not going over there anymore. Nobody knew why. My friend didn't even know why. She just remembers that I wouldn't come over to her house anymore. That would have been a good warning sign, you know.
It would have been. I mean, bedwetting for children, loss of attention in school, you know, teenagers cutting or, you know, fire setting. I mean, there's the list is, it's out there. It's out there for sure.
Right, but we need to know how to and understand how to watch for that as parents.
Yeah, I think we have to come at it, as you've all said. You know, we're coming at it from an education and as a prevention and also an interventive way. We're coming at it. We need to come at it legally because we really, and the other side of that is the cycle of abuse. You know, when the mother or the father, you know, have been abused, and sometimes it perpetuates itself. And, you know, the therapies that are necessary and getting into the communities, and it takes a whole village. This takes a whole village. It takes one person to mess it up, and it takes a whole village to fix it.
Yeah.
It really does. It's a long journey.
Well, and that's generational.
Through it. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
That generational that people talk about, that I don't know that everybody understands that it doesn't necessarily mean it's by the same person. It's not the same perpetrator. But
no.
Again, in my case, I knew, you know, that my mom had been abused. She had shared, you know, more than I probably needed to know as a child. And then I knew that my grandma had been sexually abused. And so then when it came time to finally tell my mom another abuse that had happened to me, which was my stepdad, basically she told me that it just happened.
Wow.
That's how that's how I got to the point of getting really rebellious, because I couldn't understand why she wouldn't try and help me in some way, and that she chose she chose him over me, and she was with him until the day she died. And you know, how do you process that? Even as a child, I was 15 years old at that time. You can't process it.
You can't process it. And now, in looking back, I'm sure you look back and you realize that, you know, she was trauma bonding, right? She was unable to break away from him because of you know, what she had been through. And because of that, you became victimized. I'm so sorry. It is, really is it's a pervasive, insidious threat to all children. And it's so difficult. It's really so difficult. It's so big. Doesn't it feel like, you know, I heard somewhere, and I haven't verified the statistics, but, you know, that the average pedophile affects the lives of 200 children each.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a lot of children per person. That's a lot of children. And the laws just don't cover it, and it's difficult to prove it. And, you know, and here we are wanting to do something. Now, do you guys do like an annual conference and fundraisers and other than the things that you both have talked about? Tell me more about what your organization does and how you know, other ways that you get the word out and bring survivors together and that kind of thing.
You talking about for Kim's or for NASA?
Yeah. Yeah, with NASA, that's what you're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm actually talking to both of you, so yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I can answer it unless Kim wants to.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, basically, if you go into the website itself, okay, they have NASA programs listed right there. And they do have a calendar of events there, okay? So there's a lot of information just on that first, you know, group of the NASA programs. But then you can go into, like, the news articles and things of that nature, and that'll give you all the information for all the upcoming events and everything that NASA has planned. Yeah. And so the other thing, too, is that you never know what's going to happen either, because – as we even speak tonight, laws are being changed around this nation every single day, okay? So with that being said, there could be a lot more things happening. And now I think we're up to right over 28 states, I think, that are totally abolished now. However, there's 18 to 20 that are still trying to amend. And you know, that is one thing that I think that they should just totally wipe out, you know, is every state should be totally abolished. And I don't have any leeway for any, you know, laws that are going to benefit anyone that's going to hurt a child, you know. But I did want to say something earlier about Kim was talking about going out and, you know, doing some things in the community and things. I do have a good little story I wanted to share with y'all. About, I'd say about 3 or 4 months ago, there was a series of 3 different events, okay, that happened in a local elementary school here in New Orleans, okay? And of course, you know, nothing was done. And so the parents came to me, all right? And I said, okay, and tell me what happened. I said, okay. And I said, what has happened? And they said, well, they brought the children into the office. And I said, okay, were you there? And not the first time I wasn't there, but I said, okay, well, that's got to stop. First of all, I said, I'm gonna call somebody right now. So I got off the phone, and I wound up calling Archbishop Amon here in New Orleans direct, okay? And I told him mm-hmm. that we have some situations going on down here, and he knows when I call that there's a situation, and this was definitely a situation, okay? So basically there were words of rape being used and inappropriate touching going on within the ages of actually three different levels between fourth grade and sixth, okay? So
wow.
They had no idea at all that this had happened over the previous week. Okay, now I'm talking about the archdiocese. Now, this is a Catholic school I'm talking about. And I'm like, you know, that is a major problem right here, major, major problem. So he calls me up and he says, hey, John, how are you? What can I help you with? I said, well, you know, we have a serious situation down here. And I'm sure you're not aware that there's been, you know, some allegations over at the school. And that you all don't even know about it, do you? And he said, I had no idea. I said, well, he says, well, can I call you right back? And I said, yeah. And so I get a phone call 5 minutes later from the school superintendent, okay, over the archdiocese. She says, John, what should we do? I said,
wow.
Really? You asking me? I didn't say that to her. It just put me in shock that she wanted my input over the situation. Mm. I'm like, you know, it's about time. It's about time you start listening to us. I said, number one, I said, there's no education whatsoever here. Okay, that's the main problem. I said, nobody knows what's going on and nobody knows how to do it. Because when it happens, everybody runs and everybody self-polices and then everybody gets hurt. In the long run, I said, you have to do something with education. I said, you know, and as far as the incidences go, I said, yes, you have to go and file a report on it. You know, then that has to be turned into the Vatican, okay? So that's the way the process goes now. And without that, you know, that there's no other way to solve the problem. She says, you're absolutely correct. So the very next week, she had the school get together in every single school now in New Orleans between the fourth graders and the sixth graders, and they're having a, you know, an educational situation go on now, which I'm very proud to be a part of. So that's my good story for today.
That's awesome. That's really awesome.
So
I'm
glad I had an impact.
Yeah.
You know?
You're definitely making a difference. You're definitely making a difference. Congratulations.
Well, the last thing I think that needs to go down with this is that you don't want to traumatize more kids than are already being traumatized by the situation, number one. You know, and secondly, I said they could be facing massive lawsuits here. You know, you never know. I mean, yes, more than likely something's going to happen. But now they're actually going out of their way. They're hiring the right people. And she asked me, you know, that she said, well, we can actually have a counselor go in. I said, no. I said, that's not going to work. I said, you know, the archdiocese has done enough damage in the past. You need to bring somebody else in that is you know, comparable about what the message is, but I don't agree with that. And so they did. They went to an outside source. And, of course, yes, I mean, they're kind of being not really told what to say, but you know how it is with the archdiocese. I mean, yes, I mean, they want things done their way. And, hey, at least it's a start, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, our children are so trusting, and we teach them that they need to follow the orders of people who are in authority. And then they're taken advantage of. So it's so difficult to find that balance, but education is the first step in prevention. There's no doubt about it. And then when we do find something, it's wonderful to have people like you that know what exactly to do and how to do it, how to get the resources.
Well, I was
going to
say the same about both of you all, because by both of you all being here tonight, you know, I love this because that gives us our opportunity, you know, to talk with each other about it. And that way, you know, if there's something that I might be leaving out, you know, Linda, you can come in and fill me in, and same with Kim. You know, this is why I love it when people get together like this. And not only that is that, yes, I'm a host, but I'm also a person. okay? And yes, I do help survivors every single day of my life. But my best therapy is being right here with you all tonight, you know? And every time I do a show, I meet somebody just like, you know, you all. I love y'all. And that's my way of communicating to everyone out here is that, you know, speaking with other survivors on a level that they understand who you are and where you're coming from, it's different than a lot, you know, say with some therapists, you know. And I know a lot of us can agree with the therapist situation is that, oh, man, I've seen people go to, can't even count 10 different therapists before they found one. And then somebody finds one and they stay with them forever. So what's your intake on that, Linda? What do you think about that?
Well, I think you need to fire as many therapists as it takes until you find the right one. I have had encounters with therapists. I knew the minute I was sitting across 5 minutes into the session that this person didn't know a thing about adult survivor of child sexual abuse. In one particular case, she had no clue. And in fact, she told the man that became my second husband not to be there for me and not to help me through it, that I needed to go through it by myself. So I had lost my fiance and lost my job. I had to move out of my home because I couldn't afford that. I had to get my kids all settled and heal while I found a job. And I had to do it all alone because she was advising him not to help me. Who does that?
No.
Who's trained to do that? You know, just insane. There are a lot of therapists who maybe they get their, you know, their degrees, and maybe they're really good at certain aspects of what they do. But this is a very specialized field, and it takes specialized training. And I wouldn't be surprised if the best therapists are those who have themselves had some personal experience, and that's maybe why they got into therapy. Yeah.
Thank you. And that is very true. I was going to bring that up.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are good therapists out there, but fire as many as you have to until you find the one that not only knows what they're talking about, but then also that you connect with and trust, and that person that can speak to you in a way that you can understand and learn and hear and heal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big journey. We need all the support we can get in all the right places at all the right time.
Right. I agree with that 100%. You know, and timing is everything in my eyes these days. In other words, you know, if there's a time, you know, for a person to come forward for the first time, and there's a time for you know, someone to, you know, find that therapist that they finally find, you know, and there's a time for somebody to share their story, you know. But here's the thing with the timing issue is that, you know, yes, we're going to get a lot of bumps in the road. However, you know, when you find the right people and you have all these ducks in a row, it's amazing how fast that your life can take off, you know, and just be so wonderful. But, you know, if you can sidetrack, you know, and that happens to a lot of us. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say I live a perfect life. I've had been hospitalized before over this, and who knows, I may again. But I'm a totally different person these days because of meeting people just like you all, you know. Absolutely.
Timing, you know, when you say timing, that's absolutely true. When I had what the therapist called my emergency, which was the onset of my memories, it was the time for me. My mind and my body were ready for me to confront it and deal with it. Every decision I had made had brought me to that place. There was no avoiding it. It was happening, and I think I tried to avoid it, which is why it all came out for me in a big event, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the triggers would come frequently. And even as the triggers began to come less frequently, they always came with the same unearthing vengeance. I don't have them very often, but when I have a trigger, it can set me on my tail and just, you know, I don't even know what happened, and suddenly there I am, you know, off my feet by a trigger. Those are normal things. They're normal things, and, you know, we've been through trauma. And everybody in this life, nobody gets through this life without some kind of a trauma. This is just our trauma. And, right. You know, finding the support network to get us through it, and, like you said, being willing to get the help, whatever form of help that is that we need. And
that's,
doing
that's
what
why
we
I bring
need
the timing
to do.
Up. You know, that's why I bring the timing up, Linda, because the same thing. It's just like tonight meeting you. It's like, oh, man, that was just perfect timing. You know, well, there we go. You know, it's like, hey, tomorrow I can meet somebody else or somebody could meet me. And it's like, you know, that couldn't have come at a better time. And that's what I mean by, you know, it's the fact that meeting people, you know, like you all and people through the network that we have here at NASC, it provides, you know, so many platforms of this wonderful stuff that, you know, I can't wait when finally people do decide to pick that phone up, you know, and I'm always here. My phone number is all over the front of the page of NASCA, and anybody out there, you can always call me. And I want everyone to know that, first and foremost, is that we have a lot of plans, a lot of good future plans here at NASCA, and I hope that you all will continue to come back on the show, Linda, and I can ask for a better co-host and Kim. I love you to death, and I just want this to continue, you know, and it's such a beautiful thing to have when you have people like yourselves here tonight. It just makes everything to me. Absolutely.
Well, you both are doing amazing work, and the world is a better place for having you in it. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you,
thank
too,
you,
for everything. You know, you
yeah,
had a on your second memoir. Well, go ahead, Kim. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I just said I look forward to checking out your book. I'm going to do that.
Well,
sure.
Thank you
and,
very much.
Yeah, and I also friend requested you on Facebook. So.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
So
yeah,
I can follow you.
That'd be perfect. I just posted, I did a post today about trauma bonding. So trying to, you know, be out there and be helpful in a kind and thoughtful, supportive way. I mentioned, I had so many guardian angels that I don't know where I would be today without them all, and a very loving family. I'm very blessed. Wonderful children. My first husband and I are still wonderful co-parents, and I'm blessed to be married to an amazing man who puts up with me. Not that I don't have to put up with him, because I do sometimes, but I tease him about that. But he really loves me for exactly who I am, and he encouraged me in the writing of the book. And, you know, at one point he was saying he wanted to read it, and I didn't want him to read it until I had it completed, because I wanted to make sure that, you know, it took him all the way to the end. I didn't want to leave him hanging in some, you know, middle point, right? So I made him wait until I finished it. But, you know, he's been a support network for me. We need people who love and care for us. And, of course, I mean, I love and care for him too. So I'm very, very blessed. And I've been through a lot of things, but I'm stronger and more focused, and I believe I've come out of this better than I thought it was possible to come out of this. I have a true contentment and a true peace and a true happiness. And for those folks who are out there that are listening to this, who have trauma in their lives, or maybe who are in a dark place right now, I would like to say to them, hang on, you're worth it, and you will get through this. My children were what made me hang on, and I hope that each person that's out there believes in themselves and has a reason to hang on, and if they need a reason or someone to cling to, you know, folks like you are there. There's a lot of great books out there, and you can have happiness, and you can have peace, and you can heal. You really can. So I hope people will hang on and trust and believe and ask for help when they need it.
Yeah, that's definitely the most important thing, is to come out and ask, you know, is that that's what NASC is here for, Linda, you know, and I just love this organization for having that opportunity, you know, for somebody that needs somewhere to go. Just in the past, I'd say 2 weeks alone, I've had probably about 4 or 5 people reach out to me, and I tell you, you know, that's saying something. Look, if it's one person, if it's 10, it doesn't matter. At least they're doing it, you know, and that's the thing about it is, and I'm telling you, there's been more men, and I'm proud to see this, is that I was really worried about this, is that, you know, the average age is about 52, okay, for a male to come out. Well, I've seen a lot more that are coming out in their late 20s and 30s now, okay, so I was really worried about this, and I'm going to tell you why, is because, you know, later on in life, you know, you develop PTSD, anxiety, depression, all this stuff, you know. And when you, if I'd have known what I knew back when I was 28 or 30, you know, I would have been a whole new man back then, you know. So what I'm getting at is that I can definitely see that the education is working, you know, to a certain degree, is that at least people are starting to listen and reach out more than ever. And listen, we are here for you. And if you're out there listening right now, pick that phone up. Call me, please. Any one of us are always going to be here for you. And that's what I just love about NASC. And listen, we have about, you know, I'd say about 5 minutes left for the show. Kim, is there anything you want to say before we let Linda finish up?
No, just thank you for being on, Linda, and for sharing all of your wisdom. And I just look forward to getting to know you better.
Kim, thank you. I do also. I look forward to connecting with you on Facebook and perhaps supporting your efforts more and, you know, just continuing to be part of the village and make a difference in the world for the people who need us to be there for them. So many were there for me, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to be there for others and to give back.
Amen. Thank you. Well, you're part of the NASC family for sure now. So, as
well,
John
that's
said,
the best.
Well, if you have ever need anybody to talk to, or just, you know, just to have a friend, so we're always here.
Well, thank you, and I feel the same. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And two, I know, Linda, you had a couple of things that you know, the entrenched. Okay,
entrenched.
This is second entrenched. How can they get in touch with you in order to, you know, maybe get one of your books or you know, some websites or anything they can look up to find you with these? So how can people get in touch with you to
So my website is easy. It's my name, LindaLeeBlakemore.com. And there is a contact button in there. Somebody wants to reach out, that's the way to do that. There's also a way that you can purchase the book through there, through the publisher. An easier way to purchase the book, I hope the publisher doesn't crack me for saying this, but, you know, obviously a faster, easier way. The book is on Amazon. It's Barnes & Noble, you know, Walmart.com, all of those places. But the book's available in a Kindle version right now and also in a hardcover. But what's interesting about today's show, the soft cover is coming out in a day or two, so there'll be a soft cover available too, which is, you know, a little bit less expensive for folks who – want to hold the paper in their hand and read it, as opposed to those who would, you know, like to have it in a Kindle version. That's the cheapest way, is the Kindle version.
Yeah.
But it's out there, and I really hope that, you know, I'm able to help folks. I mean, Marnie Grundman, I don't know if you're familiar with who she is, but she's a pretty amazing woman, and she did a TED Talk. Anyway, she endorsed my book, and she what she wrote about mm-hmm. it was, Entrenched is a memoir of holding on and letting go, illustrates how the effects of trauma rule our lives until we take charge, take a chance, and work through it. And I really hope that my story will give people the courage to do just that. There was another woman who endorsed the book, Sue Williams Silverman. Her father was an ambassador, and her book is called Because I Remember Terror, Father, I Remember You. And, of course, it was a pretty brutal account of sexual abuse between her and her father. And she calls the book Entrenched an important addition to the literature of abuse and recovery. So the book is called Entrenched, a memoir of holding on and letting go, and I really hope that it helps to make a difference and give people a hope for healing. There is healing out there. We
well,
can
first
get through
of all,
that.
Congratulations, Linda. Congratulations. I'm so happy for you. I really am. It's been such a pleasure to meet you tonight, by the way, and I can't wait to, you know, see what else is in your forte for the future. You know, I can't wait, because I'm always intrigued to meet people just like you. I really thank you for everything that you're doing, too, by the way. And I know we have about 3 minutes left. So, Linda, if you want to, you know, just kind of leave the public with a gem, just anything that you want to say, you know, for a message, anything you'd like.
Well, I think I would just like to repeat, and I think I said this earlier, but our past formulates our self-worth, how we attach to others, and how we believe we deserve to be treated. When our past is cloaked in unresolved childhood trauma, it can lure us toward unhealthy partners as a way to remember, work through unresolved issues, or get control over or fulfill something we did not get as a child. The choices that we are making are because of those things. It doesn't mean that we are damaged individuals or bad. We have had trauma, but you're not alone. You can heal, and you will get through this.
Thank you so much for that. That was absolutely beautiful. I can tell you are such a great writer. I can't wait to read your book. I really can't. I'm going to have to get it. Like, it's tomorrow it's coming out, huh?
The soft cover should be coming out tomorrow. The book is out in hardcover and ebook, and the soft cover should be coming out tomorrow or the next day. Yes.
Yay.
I'm excited to have it out there.
Yeah, we're excited for you, too. And anything we can ever do for you, you know, with that. And anytime that you want to come back on the show, please. You've been such a wonderful guest tonight. And, you know, we could have talked all night long, because we only touched the surface of so many issues tonight, you know that, and we never really have enough time to, I guess, get everything in that we want to say in a given night, but that just gives us another reason to call back in, you know. But it's been a great night, and I want to thank Kim Lakin too, my co-host tonight, for being here. And I love both of you all very much, and I wish everyone success in everything in your life. And if you see something, please say something. And thank you for joining the NASCA show tonight. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, John and Kim.
Blog Talk Radio.